and welcome to Mormon Channel Daily. The pressure to start a family can be enormous, and sometimes when that doesn't go as planned, it can be very overwhelming and difficult. There are many couples that struggle with infertility. In fact, research shows that 15% of couples in the United States are infertile, and other countries throughout the world show similar figures. Although it is a very difficult thing to accept, please know that this is not your fault and that there is hope and there are options for you. Today, I invited Jessica and Greg to share their experience while dealing with infertility and how they've maintained their faith and hope throughout this time. Hi, Jessica and Greg. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
Great. I'm so happy that you could be here today. Tell us a little bit about yourselves first. How did you guys meet?
Go for it.
We actually worked together.
Okay, cool.
So yeah. We were around each other all the time and then became friends and then started dating and then got married. It's
wow.
like that
great way to do it. Yeah. Like, yeah. I love that. And how long have you been married?
Almost 5 years.
5 years. Wow. That's awesome. Great. So tell us a little bit about just your experience and when did you start trying to have a family?
Well, we started trying to have a family as soon as we got married.
Okay.
We didn't really try to hold back anything in the beginning and just kind of went for it.
Yeah.
We knew before we got married that we were probably going to have a hard time. So we didn't feel like we should stop anything from happening if it was
going
to happen.
So, right. Okay, great. Yeah. So you knew going in. What were some feelings that you had when you realized that your plan wasn't going accordingly?
For me, I was pretty accepting of it. I'm generally pretty accepting of stuff like that. So it wasn't too hard for me to come to terms with it. For Jess, on the other hand, though.
Yeah.
So we were sad, of course, at first. And I'm told, like, he was a little sad, too. He can say that he's not, but he was.
Yeah.
But we decided that we were just going to adopt. So it wasn't, like, a huge deal to us that we weren't able to conceive naturally. And so our whole plan was really to go through LDS Family Services and adopt. But to adopt through them, you had to, like, provide proof of an infertility diagnosis, and you had to be married for 2 years. So okay. We did, like, testing in the beginning just to for that piece of paper.
Right.
And then 2 years before our second anniversary, church announced that they weren't doing adoptions anymore, so we lost out on that.
Oh.
So our original plan was actually to adopt. It wasn't to conceive.
So you mentioned that going into your marriage, you knew that there was kind of going to be an issue. Explain to the audience or to us, how did you know that?
Just with my disability being a paraplegic, doctors have always said that it was going to be impossible, if it could even be done, of being able to do it on my own. Just with, like, having no feeling from basically mid-chest down.
Yeah.
That definitely adds some complications to it all.
Right.
It's not impossible for everyone who's a paraplegic. Like, each spinal cord injury is
different.
He's also been married before, and they weren't able to have children either. So we had a pretty good idea that
right.
it just wasn't going to happen easily.
So you mentioned that you tried to adopt, and then LDS services, they didn't have their, or the church got rid of their adoption services. So where did you go from there? What different options did you look for?
I feel like that moment for me was really devastating when the church made that announcement. And I know it was for a lot of couples that were counting on that, because the church's program was so affordable to adopt. It was one of those things that we were prepared to adopt because it wasn't going to kill us to adopt.
Financially,
yeah, right.
Yes. And so when we found that out, we kind of were back to square one, and we needed to make a decision on what we were going to do. So we kind of went back to fertility and went and saw another doctor. He was very hopeless when we met him. In vitro, maybe it would work. It was a very sad appointment, I think. So then we heard about Utah Adoption Specialists. It's a group of, like, caseworkers that mostly came from LDS Family Services that started a company doing home studies. They started doing home studies so that you could adopt. So we met with them, and they had classes that you would take that would show that adoption is still possible without LDS Family Services. So we kind of started going that route again, and infertility got put on the back burner again, and we decided to adopt. And we were going to try to adopt privately to kind of control the cost, because anybody who's in this world knows that adoption, you're looking at a price tag of, you know, $30,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
And so, and we were in our 20s, and we We didn't have $30,000 sitting in the bank. We started working our way through adoption again. And then we had two kind of failed adoption experiences that happened within, 5 months?
Mm-hmm. To make a long story short, basically one lady came to us and it was crazy. We thought that it was a very, very good chance. She happened to call my mom's business. My mom then referred her over to us.
The names of an adoption agency and the name of his mom's company are very similar. So she
thought she was calling an agency,
but she called my mom's company instead.
Oh.
And so we're like, oh my gosh, like, this what are the chances?
Yeah. God wants us to have this baby.
So we started going through with it, talking with her, everything, and then it started getting to a point where she was like, well, I need you to buy me a cell phone. I need you to buy me this.
Oh.
So a whole bunch of red flags started coming up. We started talking with a lawyer. He's like, be very careful. Don't commit to anything.
Yeah.
So that's when we started kind of pumping the brakes on a little bit. And then she ended up just completely disappearing.
Oh, before she even disappeared, we prayed about it. Remember that?
Yeah.
We prayed about it individually. We were on different sides of the house praying about this situation. And both of us felt really strong no's, which was so weird.
Yeah.
And anybody, like you said at the beginning, 15% of people go through things like this. And anybody who's going through this knows to say no to an opportunity is so hard.
Yeah.
And so we started feeling this really strong no, but we didn't really obey it. And so we didn't actually tell her no. But then she
just vanished.
Yeah. That was hard, kind of.
Yeah.
It was a really weird situation. And then we had another one a few months later that we felt really good about. It was the opposite. We prayed about it. We felt amazing, really. And we were supposed to meet with her one night. And they told us in our classes to kind of Facebook stalk birth moms to be sure that, you know, everything's good and things like that. And that sounds horrible, and you can judge me for that.
No, but you want to know who the person is.
And so I'd looked her up on Facebook, and I was just kind of looking at her posts. And that same day that we were supposed to meet, she posted something about how excited she was to raise her baby with her boyfriend. And so it was kind of this like, oh, and then she called us. And so that was kind of the end of that. So a lot of people go further before they have a failure and get more involved with the birth moms than we did. But it was enough for us that Greg actually asked us to take a break from adoption because it was just, it's kind of hard.
Yeah, emotionally. And how long ago was that?
I think it's been about 2 years. So that happened. And then Greg just had this feeling that we needed to start looking at fertility options again. And so we did. So we have a home study complete. We're legal to adopt if a situation arises, but and we'll always keep that current.
Yeah.
But now we're kind of looking into, we're in the fertility world a little more.
Yeah. I just had this feeling. I was like, we need to go meet with some doctors again about fertility stuff and see what's going on. So that's when we started meeting with like Reproductive Care Center.
I've heard great things about them.
They're pretty.
It's been a really, really good experience dealing with them. But yeah, like she said, we've continued going the adoption route, looking at that stuff. We've also continued to start going the foster care route, starting to look at that stuff and do everything. So we're really keeping our options open for everything and anything. And whatever happens, whatever works, like, we're open to it. We're completely just putting ourselves out there for whatever needs to and is supposed to happen.
We just want to be prepared for anything, really.
That's so great. What has been the most difficult part, do you feel, throughout this journey?
I think as a couple, the hardest thing, in my opinion, and you might have a different opinion, but I feel like we're never on the same page in the grief cycle, if that makes sense. And so one of us will be very sad and depressed and the other one will be fine. And then we swap. And so it feels like it's just this weird roller coaster,
but we're at
different parts of the roller coaster. In my opinion, that's been the worst.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a hard but good thing, because then when she's down, then I'm fine and I can pick her up and other way around as well. All the bad results that you get, all the no's, all that stuff. I mean, each one definitely takes a toll on you, and you have to regather, figure out how you're going to go about it, figure it out next, what's going to be the best step to take. It's just hard that way, having to start over and over and over again. And there have been plenty of times throughout the thing where I've told her, I'm like, we're just not supposed to have kids. We're never going to. We're not going to. That's just it. For some reason, we're not. And she was never willing to accept that, which is definitely a good thing. I mean, we wouldn't be where we are now if she was willing to accept it.
Right.
he's more of a realist. So if he feels like it's not going to happen, what's the point?
Yeah.
And so we decided back in the fall. So Reproductive Care Center has this really cool program, like a guarantee program, where you pay so much and then you get 4 tries of in vitro. And this is if you qualify, like you have to have certain diagnoses and to qualify for it. But we qualified for it. You get 4 tries of in vitro. And if you don't come out with a live baby, you get your money back.
Wow.
Right? Our doctor was talking to us. He's like, really? We did one artificial insemination. That's usually the people's first step because it's less expensive. And we did that. And our doctor told us, he's like, the only reason I did that for you is because you were so against in vitro. Because I was very against in vitro. I didn't want to do it. It was expensive. It's a lot of everything.
Explain to us what in vitro is, exactly like what the process is.
So with in vitro, the woman undergoes called ovary stimulation, right? So you do injections every day to stimulate your ovaries to try to increase the number of eggs that they're going to get out of your ovaries. And after you do that for so long, for my first time, we only did it for 8 days because my ovaries just sucked up the drugs and they were really fast.
Yeah.
This last time we went 12 days, so it was longer. They stimulate them until a certain point, and when they feel like you're ready, then you take a shot, and that's going to help the ovaries to release and go to that like final maturation. And then right before they release, they do a surgery. It's called egg retrieval, and they go in and they take the eggs out of all the follicles in your ovaries. It's crazy.
Wow. So yeah, that sounds
they go
intense.
In and you're out for it. They go in and they get all the eggs out, and then from there, the day after your egg retrieval, our clinic calls us to let us know what it looks like. Our first time around, we got 8 eggs and only 4 were mature. So it was kind of a really sad response that only 50% were mature. I'm young, I'm healthy.
Right.
We're male factors, so everything was supposed to be perfect on my side. And only 50% were mature. And then from there, normal in vitro, they take the eggs and they put them in a petri dish. And then they take the sperm and they put it in the petri dish and then they fertilize. With us, we had to do a special thing called ICSI, where they literally look under a microscope and find the best sperm and then put it in the egg to try to increase the chance of fertilization.
Okay.
So they did that for us and only one of my eggs fertilized, but it fertilized abnormally. It had multiple nucleuses, so it wasn't a viable pregnancy.
Right.
So usually what they do is if they fertilize, everything looks good, they watch them for 3 to 5 days. And if everything's still looking good, then they put the embryos back in, however many you choose. Our clinic won't do more than 2.
Okay.
They very strongly encourage 1.
Yeah.
And so our first time around, we didn't make it to a transfer because none of my eggs worked. And this last time around, I did this thing called ICSI. So it's this dish that has like a protein on it. And they put the sperm on it, and there's, I guess, the way our doctor explained it, your sperm has like these receptors on their heads that they're supposed to use to attach.
Yeah.
And you can't see them under a microscope. And so this dish has like this thing on it, and the sperm connects to it, and then they wash away the sperm, and the sperm that's still stuck to it is what they'll use for in vitro.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So we did that this last time, and it worked. So we got 8 eggs again, but all 8 were mature, and then 6 fertilized. And I know, right? And then when we got to transfer, we ended up pushing ourselves out to a 5-day transfer because all 6 embryos were still looking good. And then on day 5, we had 2 really awesome embryos and 3 kind of fair grade embryos. So they transferred 1 awesome one and 1 fair one. And because we pushed them and made them do 2.
Is there like a point to doing, you said like 1 awesome one and then 1 fair one instead of doing both?
So that was Greg's idea.
Okay.
He wanted us to keep 1 good one so that we could freeze it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that way, if this didn't work, we'd still have a good
another one
that might work.
Okay.
And so we froze the other good one, and then they watched the remaining fair ones, and we had 1 more that got good enough to freeze as well. So we're really lucky right now where we have 2 that are frozen. And then we find out this weekend if we're pregnant, which is like crazy.
Oh my goodness. How exciting.
So, so we decided to like go through this whole process only because we would get the money back. Some couples are super strong and they can go through this stuff. And I don't think we could have done it.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have handled it. Part of the whole process, they found out I had a whole bunch of polyps in my uterus. And each polyp acts like an IUD. So it's like birth control on its own, right? I had to have a DNC. And after that, they put you on this medication for 30 days to help suppress all your hormones. I think through the whole last 5 years, those 30 days have been the worst 30 days ever.
He's like, yes.
It was pretty bad.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
It made me crazy. It made me angry. It made me depressed. I literally wanted to die every day.
Yeah.
I would get home and just get back in bed and not do anything after work. That, I think, was the worst experience of all of it. And some people have to be on those medications longer. And I was lucky where I only had to do it for 30 days. It's a hard process. You're putting your body through a lot. And
definitely not just physically, but and then all the emotions that come with it too, like
physical,
affect your body.
Emotional, financial, it's everything.
So, in the midst of all of this, how have you managed to maintain your faith and be so optimistic through all of this?
Well, we're not always optimistic.
I'm sure there's moments.
I'm a pretty optimistic person all the time. I've been through a lot in life, and so I've learned to just not let things really get to me or get the best of me.
Right.
Always find that like little silver lining to everything. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I've done. I've always tried to stay positive, look at the best. Everything in life happens for a reason. We're not handed anything that we can't handle. That's what I've always done, and that's how I've always been. For me, I mean, I was in a snowboarding accident 13 years ago that paralyzed me. And so if I can make it through that,
you can do
like,
anything.
Like, what's this?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how I've gone about it.
I think that at some point we were prompted to be very open about everything. And that was through the adoption stuff, actually, in our classes. They told us to be really open and let people know that you want to adopt so that they think of you when they hear about opportunities. So we decided to be overly open about everything. When we started looking into the fertility as well, I think that's probably been the biggest thing is you can physically feel people's prayers for you. A lot of people have been praying for us, and we know they have been, and you can feel it. When life's really, really hard, you can feel it kind of plateau for yourself so you don't keep crashing. I feel like that's been the biggest thing. And because we're so aware of that and we know so many people are praying for us, there's these little miracles that happen that I think that if we weren't so aware, we wouldn't recognize them as miracles. And just a lot, like even with this last cycle of in vitro, all of these things that have gone well for us, I feel like every single one of them is this little mini moment that we wouldn't have recognized before if we weren't praying so hard.
Right.
I mean, and even if things went poorly, I mean, it would be okay. I feel like it's more this awareness. I feel like God wanted us to just be super aware, wanted us to share throughout all of this. I feel like we've made a lot of friends that are going through similar things and have been able to help each other through things.
Yeah.
And when you're going through things, I don't think you recognize that faith is even helping you.
Yeah.
And so
until you're able to take a step back and be like, oh, I was being helped through that.
And so I think a lot of it, and we're not perfect and we've had moments where it's really hurt, but you just kind of push through. And then you realize after that push through was your faith and you didn't even know it was faith. You just thought that you were surviving.
Well, that's incredible. What would you tell couples who are going through the same thing? What would you want them to know?
I feel very, very strongly that all couples need to know that they're allowed to be wherever they're at on acceptance. Some people have a really hard time accepting it, and some people, like Greg, are okay, and it's fine. I think that it's very important to know that you're allowed to be angry. Throughout all of this, I feel like the biggest advice we get from people is like, God has a plan, and it's okay. And it's like, it's not okay, though.
Yeah.
It's not. Like, yes, God has a plan, and he loves you, and you're supposed to know that. But when you're going through something, you don't know that all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to know you're allowed to be mad, and you're allowed to be mad at him. The biggest piece of advice I've ever received was a woman. She's a bit older than me, and she has 3 teenage kids. And I was telling her I was mad, and I felt guilty because I was mad, because everyone says you're supposed to like just trust that it's all good. Mm-hmm. And she told me, well, my 3 kids get mad at me sometimes, and sometimes they hate me. And she's like, I'm going to tell you, as a parent, it doesn't stop you from loving them. It doesn't change how much you love them. It doesn't change anything. And she's like, if anything, it makes you pour out more love to them because you're trying to help them.
Yeah.
And she said, if I'm like that as a mortal mom, what's God like as, you know, an eternal parent? I think that's the biggest thing for couples, is just to know you're allowed to be mad. Pray, get mad at him, talk to him. I feel like my relationship with God has gotten better over the years because I am very vocal and I tell him that I'm mad. Like, why did you do this to me?
Yeah.
And then I forgive him, and, you know, he forgives me. But you're allowed to be mad. Just don't hold a grudge.
I think as well that when they're going through it and trying to figure out what they need to and want to do, take your time. There's no rush to get it done. I mean, unless you're in like your late 40s or 50s, like do what you need to do. Make sure you're both on the same page and just go about it in a pace that's comfortable for the both of you. I have found, and from what I can tell, that it's way more stressful going about trying to have a kid this way than if you were to just naturally have your own kid. And so it just adds way more stress onto you, your relationship and everything. So finding your good pace for the both of you to go through it, I think is very, very important. That way you're not stressing each other out too bad. You're not adding anything extra. She would have a feeling of what she needs to do. I would have a feeling what I need to do. And we would talk about it and figure it out. That's the biggest thing, just communicating it and figuring it out.
I think that it's also not putting all of your eggs in one basket. I think that's helped us immensely, is knowing that if we don't conceive a baby, it's okay. And some couples, that's what they want, is to conceive a baby. But for us, it's okay. I don't have to give birth. I don't need to be pregnant. So if I'm not, then we'll start focusing on adoption.
Just keep your options open.
Yeah. And we're doing the foster care stuff because we've always wanted to be foster parents, but we were going to wait until we grew our own family first. And a few months ago, we were just like, what are we doing? Let's just do it now. And I don't know why, but it's been very helpful. Mm-hmm. We've taken a lot of classes to get ready for our training. And we're like, we're going to be awesome parents.
Yeah.
Even if we never foster, we know how to deal with traumatic events.
Yes.
I think a lot of it is, especially, and I think it's harder on women sometimes because our bodies, every month we're reminded that we're not pregnant, and it's a hard thing.
And then every Facebook post of someone being pregnant, and
baby blessings. If you go to church and, you know, babies are being blessed, those have been hard ones for us, for me. I don't know. I think that you have to kind of come to terms with unconventional families are okay. And that's kind of the way the world's going anyway, and it's okay. You just have to find your own acceptance. And I think that comes through, you know, grief, obviously, but just having faith in yourself too, and knowing that you're going to be okay no matter what.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. Just thank you for being here and for being open and willing and honest. Most importantly, I think for families that are going through the same thing, they want to hear honesty. Like you said, it's a lot more helpful. So thank you so much. I really do appreciate you for coming in. If you are going through a similar situation, just please know that you're not alone. God loves you and He knows you. And more importantly, He knows what you're going through. So don't bottle your feelings in, just like Jessica and Greg said, talk about it. If you are seeking professional help, you can visit ldsfamilieservices.org. Thank you so much for listening today. Remember, you can tune in every Monday through Friday for daily uplifting messages.